was a ride.
Well, we still didn't figure out why the red one is so bad and why it would be so much more powerful than his father. Thank you for joining us for the San Carlos Computer Club. I am Scott Stimson, the host. This is...
I'm the mommy.
That would be you, yeah?
I am the moss.
The moss, that would be
Emily. And I'm the only normal one in this family.
And that was Bebe. We're coming back from the second Venom movie now.
Everyone watch the second Venom movie. Woo! That was awesome!
Our first movie in Wyoming in almost 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, going back to time being in the movie theater, it was good. It was stressful.
I saw
everybody like with masks and everything. So that was
cool. Yes, but at the same time, there was a lot of people there. There was a lot of people in the line. This movie,
especially in the concession area.
That concession line was insane.
That was insane. They talked like half an hour.
Well, guys, that was a lot of fun. Who has a favorite part of the movie?
Either the gay club or
somebody other than Emily.
I like the part where Venom took cover Mrs. Chang.
Oh yeah.
I love that part, you know. When Tom went to get him and he was like, okay, what else? You know, being so like tell me more nice things.
Bebe, you got a favorite part?
No, but I really like that villain couple.
The villain couple.
I can't believe you guys are saying stuff about Venom having a relationship with Anne, and you can't accept that Eddie and Venom might also be having a relationship.
Oh, well, guys, thank you for being with us as we drive home from Venom.
Woo!
This has been the San Carlos Computer Club intro for October 5th, 2021. Until next Tuesday, Tech On.
Tech On!
Thanks, guys. How long do you stay when you're here? I mean, it seems like a number of months.
We usually are 3, but this year we're coming for 4.
Oh, all right.
We go home in the middle of it just for a few days, but we'll be there December through March.
Well, very cool.
And all the Canadians can thank us because I'm sure the day after we get across the border, they'll open it.
Yeah, so this spend our $3,000.
After we pay to get across the border, they're going to open the bitch.
Right. Yeah. Isn't that the way? That doesn't seem to be the way things have been going, though.
Yeah. I still know people that are waiting to see what happens on October 21st, see if they announce that they'll be opening November 1st or something. And now I think it'll keep going November, January. I think it'll be spring maybe before they open it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's open the other direction if you're vaccinated, right? Like, Canada's accepting vaccinated people.
But there's been a serious decline in COVID-19 and hospitalization.
In Canada?
Yeah, there has. But we're hearing, depending on which, you know, person you listen to, that the issue with the American border is that when they close the American border for non-essential travel, they close it from the north. And they close it from the south. And so there's word that the Haitians arriving at the southern border are taking a lot of their staff and the different things, and they're just keeping it closed for non-essential travel until they can get everything figured out. So it's more than COVID.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does kind of make sense. But it
Morning,
also, you know,
sorry, Cheryl, didn't mean to interrupt you.
Once the COVID is going to be gone, the border is going to open. I don't think it's magically going to happen. Fred, what part of California are you in, and did you see an oil spill?
I'm in
great question.
Washington State.
You're up in Washington. That's right. Sorry. It's Paul that's down in California.
But please remember that question, because let's ask him.
Yes, we'll have to ask him. I got a little brain fart there.
At this hour of the morning, brain farts are high on the list.
Well, it's almost noon here. Well, no, it's almost 11.
I normally don't get up for another 10 minutes, so.
Hey, I'm going to start opening up this meet right at 9:45 my time, like 15 minutes before we start. Since we undoubtedly have to switch to the other meet code at some point, I just need a time that you guys can rely on at opening. So I'm going to plan on 9:45.
It's 9:50 now.
Yeah. And then we'll start the meeting at 10 o'clock. And so this is just to say hi and make sure all the equipment is working right. I took this last week and I integrated my Macintosh system into my studio office here, and I pushed some of my jobs over to it. And so when we're meeting like this and I'm doing it on YouTube, I've actually got two different computers rolling to make it happen now. And I think it will resolve the freezing that I've experienced. And as long as the internet doesn't have any problems, then I should be good to go. So this monitor now represents a completely different computer that's picking up video feeds from the other setup, and it's sending it to YouTube. But we'll use this time for that, for just catching up and debugging and making sure everything's working, making sure everybody can hear each other okay.
I want a moment of silence for Zuckerberg, since he lost somewhere around $10 billion yesterday.
I want this to be one of the topics, but I have not spent any time reading about why it went down. Did any of you guys find out why it went down?
Well, yeah, his net worth went down because Facebook went down, and they've got the whistleblower testifying at the moment. So the Facebook lost like 10% or 5% of its value, and his value is all in Facebook shares. So he lost somewhere in the neighborhood over $10 billion yesterday.
Good morning, Paul. And Bill, I was referring to it going down.
No, not the
stock price, but the actual servers, the WhatsApp and the Facebook. And did anybody catch the news on why it went down?
I don't think they know. At least in the news this morning, they didn't know.
Well, Cheryl had told me an interesting story last night. You go ahead, Cheryl, about Facebook employees.
Oh, they said that, you know, the reason it was down for so long was that a lot of the, they were doing a code chain. And when they went to do it, like to increase security, when they went to do it, they ended up deleting their whole system. But all of them are working from home from all over the place. So they needed to go into the office to actually fix it. When they got to the physical building, none of their pass cards or their entry, they couldn't get in.
Oh my
gosh. Standing outside. This is how the newscaster is telling it, you know, that there are all these technicians standing outside while the problem is inside, and they have no technology to get in. So,
that's a great story. I'm gonna have to verify it over there. It's happened too soon for me to have any information about what actually happened. It was down for like 7 hours, and what I realized is how little I do on the social networks throughout my work day, because I wasn't even aware of it. Somebody had to tell me they were down, and that was easily at the end of the day. In fact,
I was in a message with, in fact, I'm still trying to go on, with a reservation I was trying to make, and I was getting some customer support through their Facebook customer care thing, and it's through Messenger. And I'm sending the messages, and the person's not replying. And I thought, well, what the heck? Did I lose you? So I'm saying, you know, Sarah, are you still there? And they're not going anywhere. They're just sitting on my computer. And that's when I realized something was up. And then I went to do something else on Facebook, and everything's dead.
Well, I'm remembering now, it was Emily that told me. It was probably about 2 p.m. And she uses WhatsApp to communicate with groups for school. Yeah. And I had come in to just grab a snack, and she's like, Facebook and WhatsApp is down. I'm like, really? And we try and send each other a message, and we see this little watch clock on the side of the message. And she's like, see? And I'm like, wow, I've never seen that icon before. She's like, you never seen that icon before. Well, I realize I have cell service with data and Wi-Fi everywhere I go. So as long as they don't go down, I don't ever see this clock. Whereas she's disconnected from time to time, she sees this clock often. And so, yeah, it was hours later when it finally came back up. But it's funny that my daughter had to inform me, because I was so involved in my own garbage. So my 5-minute warning just went off. So that's what I'm telling you, is we will formally start in 5 minutes. It looks like we've already got a good group. And Paul, we had a question for you about the oil spill. Can you see it from your house? This is the classic question that was asked of me throughout the Exxon Valdez spill, was, can you see it from your house? And Paul went
needs to unmute.
Paul went to breakfast.
Paul went to unmute. He needs to unmute.
I wonder if he heard my question.
Yeah, he heard it. Yeah, I heard it.
Oh.
But I haven't heard about an oil spill.
What? Aren't you in California?
Where is it?
In California.
In the ocean, of course.
In the ocean.
It's supposedly 32 miles long, and they're cleaning it up. It's between Bay something and something else Bay.
I just want to take a moment and give credit to the lifestyle that Paul is living, and I thrive to have that kind of involvement.
We don't watch the news at all.
You are such...
Not at all.
You're a decent human.
Well, you know what? Last night on the news, there was all about Captain Kirk is going to space. And I thought, that's old news. We talked about that last week at Computer Club.
We broke that news. I don't know if any of you took a
look. Carolyn.
Carolyn, you're on mute.
Carolyn's talking to James. I think Carolyn is getting James in on the right time. He was saying
is that
last
what that
week,
is?
He's got a time change.
You set him up.
Oh, that's right. Last week he was saying they were having troubles figuring out the right time to get in.
Oh, they're back east, huh?
Well, they're in Canada. What part of Canada are
Ottawa.
They in? Ottawa.
They're in the capital.
We're in Ottawa.
Morning, Jim.
In a suburb of Ottawa. Yeah. Hi, good morning.
Is the capital called the Ice House?
The Ice House, yeah, that's right. Now, we got a Peace Tower, though. That's the center of our capital buildings there. And it's in Ottawa, but we're in a suburb called Orleans. Not New Orleans, it's Orleans.
old Orleans.
I didn't know there was
old Orleans.
Orleans. At Ottawa.
Well, when I went to teachers' college here in the 70s, it was so small that we used to tease people about coming from nowhere. And now it's, I don't know, about 100,000 people live here. Big growth. There's even a freeway, and you can get downtown in about 15 minutes.
So what's the military post there that Carolyn's...
Well, Alex commutes out to Sudbury and North Bay.
Hey.
Where he's the commander of two reserve units, and Heather is commanding a unit of mostly engineers, but it's logistics or something like that down in Kingston. So she commutes down there and 4 days a week to and then she works one day from her office here in the house.
Hey, I don't mean to interrupt, but I want to welcome Irving. He's come to the meeting. We've been missing you, Irving. And this is the San Carlos Computer Club. I've just opened up the feed to YouTube, and we're in a meeting in progress. And it's Tuesday. It's 10 o'clock. I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions, and you are the San Carlos Computer Club. And I don't know if anyone was paying attention, but we've reached the end of a season, like counting days that you scratch into the wall of a prison cell. I mark these seasons in weekly numbers, and have chosen last week's 53 to be this new season's number one. So welcome to the season 2021-2022 run of the San Carlos Computer Club. This is meeting number two. And I'm sorry I didn't make any big announcement last time, but this is the way my mind works.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Season! A week late.
At school, I used to have a Happy New Year every September. We would parade around in our Happy New Year outfits, blow the things, and
we're not going to do it.
You're trying to continue this forum?
Yes, absolutely. I don't think we'll be making any changes. We'll continue to do the same thing for the indeterminate future.
Right.
One of the things that we're fortunate with here in San Carlos, or in Guaymas specifically, is that they consider us in the green, but we still have masking mandates all over the place for places that are
in
open.
The green, but...
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Hi, Irving. How you doing?
Good. Good. Great. Good morning, everyone.
Good to see you. Are you in San Carlos now?
We'll be in San Carlos in a few days.
Oh, awesome. Well, we've been putting along without you the last couple of weeks, and I hope people have brought some topics. As per our normal course, we are not very well organized and have no real agenda, but I have put out a document that has some suggestions for this meeting, and if you don't have a link to that right now, I will dump it into our chat window so that you can link to it. I should have invited you earlier in the week, and this has our meet codes so that if we, at the end of, if you haven't been around Irving, but what's happening is Google Meet has decided to limit our meetings to an hour. We get started a little bit early. Sometimes we run late. And so we've ended up having to divide our meets into two different sessions. And so those codes are in that document, as well as some suggested topics for this week. Has anybody...
Can you scroll the document up again?
Yeah, I've stuck a link on in the in-call messages. So if you click on the chat bubble at the bottom, it'll bring up a link you can click to. The document looks similar to this. It looks similar. It's a Google Docs document. I can see people in it already. I see Cheryl in there. Judy's in there. Fred's in there. Judy, have you joined our group without me noticing? Good morning.
So you join the group without you noticing and without letting me in.
That's awesome. I was testing that with my personal account. I can't figure out how to do it with my personal account, but somehow I figured out how to do it with you and Chester and some others. But my personal account can't get in automatically. So this document, I've listed some news articles, and I added a new section of it just for general questions. I thought that we often have thoughts. We have questions that would be helpful to have answered. And this is a place where you can write that question down and have it answered in the group. So has anybody brought their own topics to our group today? Is there anything that right off the bat we should be talking about? Because nothing has a priority. Everybody's COVID safe. I mentioned just offhandedly, at least the last time I checked, Sonora is in yellow, but Wimus is in green. So we're still wearing masks to functions and practicing safety protocols, but the you can get sick. The hospitals have beds.
I get my booster a week from today.
Hey, good news.
Oh, that is great. You know, in that respect, we have not talked about boosters here locally, but they have just announced signups for 12 to 18-year-olds that have pre-existing conditions, have medical issues that put them at risk. They can go to the website and sign themselves up. There is going to be a vaccine drive coming up specifically for them. I suspect, I haven't seen this, but I suspect it'll also be for anyone that still hasn't gotten vaccinated that qualify.
I also just saw that Johnson & Johnson has put in for approval for their booster.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, since I'm a Johnson & Johnson person.
I was thinking
Johnson & Johnson was a one-shot deal, and they're calling this second one a booster. Is it different, or is it the same?
No, I don't know. They just put in for approval.
Okay. Some of them are making changes, and the booster, like the first shot was the same as the second shot, but then some of them are, like Pfizer announced that they're working on their booster is going to be a different makeup.
As far as I know, here in the States, it is not different because they've been out with, you can get your booster now at almost any place.
So they're just using the one that they created before.
I really don't know. I haven't heard anything about Moderna, so.
Well, that's definitely the way we understand the Pfizer booster, right? It's exactly
the way I understand it, yes.
Yeah. And I was toying with the idea of going out and getting Moderna vaccinated. Just call that my booster. I had the Pfizer first off. Maybe it's time for a different cocktail.
They recommend not to do that, not cross the board.
Yeah.
I heard that too, Chester.
Actually, I heard that they're saying it's fine. I was listening to NPR and heard that they were saying, no, there's no problem doing that, but not that I would do that. But
there's been studies that say the two mRNAs go quite fine together. The one that they were not recommending was AstraZeneca and an mRNA.
AstraZeneca, is that the same technology as the Johnson & Johnson?
I don't think so.
I know that there was two that were, at least two, that were the traditional vaccine technology as we understand it. And I know that the Moderna and the Pfizer are that mRNA technology. But I don't know anything about the AstraZeneca. All I know is it took longer to be approved.
In the United States, it was approved earlier here.
Oh, in Canada?
Yeah.
Is that a two-shot as well? No?
Well, sorry, I missed that question.
Oh, I was just curious if you knew whether that was also a two-shot vaccination, for fully vaccinated.
AstraZeneca was a two-shot.
Okay. I wonder if that's an mRNA, too.
No, it's not. AstraZeneca is the non-mRNA.
So and it's more similar to the Johnson & Johnson being a more traditional style.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Cheryl, I appreciate all your vaccine expertise. Thank you for contributing to today's show.
I just put an announcement from the transplant division, the Canadian transplant division in my province. And tomorrow at noon, I'm going to be listening to a Zoom panel. And basically, they're calling it the life and death with three doses, the current situation in Alberta for transplant recipients. And basically, what they're telling us as immune compromised transplant patients, first shot gave us some, second shot gave us some more, but we needed three to get up to the equivalent of immune response that people got out of two. So when we had our third shot, it wasn't a booster. It was just getting us up to the same efficacy as non-immune compromised we're getting out of two. So well, it would be interesting to see what the experts say to me at noon tomorrow.
Well, once a week from now on.
Right. Instead of having my daily insulin, I'm going to be...
To add to the COVID topic, I did read somewhere where they have been testing the flu shot alongside the COVID shots, and they've found no health issues between the two and theorized that they're going to be able to distribute both at the exact same time. So they'll turn it into a seasonal immunization at the same time as the flu, I imagine. Hi, Linda. Linda joined us without me being aware as well. I'm sorry, Irving. Did I interrupt you there? Go ahead.
No, that's right. I just wanted to mention that there's some big news in the COVID research. They're testing a pill now that they or may have been in somewhere, a pill which reduces hospitalization by 50%. And the other part is that I read a scientific evaluation of the different injections, and they have a measurement of how many number measurement of how much protection you get. And so they explain why the one shot has so many points and the others have different points. And at the second injection and the booster, describing exactly what it's done. So if you can find that out.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff about this.
Oh, aliens are attacking.
The pill is manufactured by Merck.
Yes, Chester, I was reading about the Merck one, and it's an antiviral. And the science is just amazing when they talk about antivirals versus, you know, vaccine and the responses and stuff. 60 Minutes had a great one on it the other day. And it's pretty interesting science.
Did you guys, speaking of 60 Minutes, did you guys see the whistleblower interview?
I've got it recorded. I haven't watched it yet. I've just seen bits and pieces of it on iMovies, but I will watch the whole thing. And the other thing, you were talking about flu shot. Bill and I got our flu shots the other day. And I'm 64, and I don't know, the Beatles said, "Will you still love me?" and all that when you're 64. And I am only 3 months shy of being 65. So I did not get the extra strength flu shot because you have to be 65. You can't be 64 and 9 months. You have to be 65. So Bill and I have different flu shot status.
On age basis, I deserve a triple.
Yes, there you go. There should be an extra large or strength.
The Scott. Yeah,
Cheryl and I swap spit every once in a while, so you know, we're probably double vaccinated.
There you go.
So, Scott, back to the whistleblower for Facebook.
Oh, yes.
And then it was very, very interesting that Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp all went down yesterday for 5 or 6 hours.
Yeah, she's before Congress right now.
Yes. Yeah, that we were talking about this at the beginning here, that they've got the congressional testimony stuff going on. They have the all their systems going down, and their stock prices going down probably from both of those. However, I unfortunately do you have any real information on why they went down? I didn't get a chance. It just happened yesterday. I didn't get a chance to see.
They said that somebody deleted their access to the web was one thing I heard. Yeah, that made no sense to me, but
that was the article that I was watching. I was going to I'll try and find it. It was on our global news, national news last night, but I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'll look for an article about it too. At least we can bring it up again next week, because I would be curious to know what technologies failed them. When you think of so many things as being dependent on these social networks, to have these three major social networks go down, it makes you realize how much work you're doing through an app like WhatsApp. I know my wife was working with customers and they just weren't answering until she realized what was going on. And so they had to switch over to phone calls to get a hold of people. I told the story of my daughter trying to communicate with her school because they use WhatsApp to keep in track of their groups, and discovering that they had no access to those groups to share. Just an interesting bit. It's like everybody's phone line went out all at the same time.
Colbert blames it on a just God.
On a just God, yeah. He is a religious fellow, isn't he?
he is. He's a good Roman Catholic.
That's awesome. Well, there sure has been a lot of fodder about how dangerous these social networks are. And that's what the whistleblower, the articles with this whistleblower's interview are saying, are things like they're comparing it to big tobacco, the way they were behaving in their organization. Hi, Linda. You wanted to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, we rely on the internet so much. Every single thing we do now around our houses and everything is done with an app. So when the internet goes down, everything you have fails. It's like getting an electrical outage. The other night we had a flash outage on the TV. I mean, it flashed and came back on, and everything in the house was messed up. All the internet was messed up, and I wound up having to call and get them to get me back online because I couldn't get back online myself.
So Linda, that happened to me 4 times in a row, that it would flash off and back on. It would knock my printer off. And finally, I got through. I have CenturyLink, and I got through to them yesterday after like 2 hours, and they gave me a $25 credit. I said, I want more, and they said, well, that's all I can do. But anyway, I got $25 for the inconvenience, because it knocks your security system off. Everything was off. And because I have AT&T at my house and it's a dead zone, the only way I can use my cell phone is through Wi-Fi, and I had no cell phone. I had nothing. But anyway, let me just read to you what I just found. So Facebook issued a statement today confirming that the cause of the outage was a configuration change to the backbone routers that coordinate network traffic between the company's data centers, which had a cascading effect.
Wow. Well, we've seen that problem before, but not recently. I'm trying to think. I think
so that's what they put out.
Google has suffered from that problem before, where their back end, somebody made the wrong configuration change and it had a cascading effect, crashing their systems down the line. Makes you remember how fragile all this stuff is. I am constantly surprised at the stacks of technology that need to function correctly for us just to do this kind of activity right now, having this video conference. So many things have to be worked correctly.
Back to my outage, it really messes up the mesh network, I'll tell you that.
Did you end up having to reconfigure your local network because of your internet provider?
Well, I unplugged everything because I couldn't get it to come back on. And normally with the mesh, when the router comes back on, the mesh network fixes itself and I don't have a problem.
Right.
But I kept having a problem and the mesh network wouldn't come back on. And then I realized I didn't have any internet either. So I was able to get a hold. I have Cox internet here.
Okay.
And no other choice. So I called them and they did a reset on the phone, and they reset it and my internet came right on.
Well, that's
so
great.
When you think that a Big Brother's watching and they can control everything you do on the telephone, you know.
Yeah.
And your point is?
My point is Big Brother's watching. And for all the people that scream about everything, they don't realize that our whole life is controlled by computers.
Well, on a much more closer to home network frustration, I have taken my Macintosh workstation and integrated it into my home office studio. And doing such, I have about 4 terabytes of external hard drive that are full of movies and TV shows that we used to use all the time. And I would have them on the network, and I'd run a Plex server, and I would be able to access them from any of the TVs, any of the streaming boxes in our house. And that was just the way we worked for years. And as we've gotten more and more internet, we've gotten farther and farther away from that kind of activity, until the point where I looked at the Macintosh workstation and realized it had been unplugged for weeks. And so now I'm left with it's kind of like a book owner, right? Like, am I ever going to watch this? Am I ever going to read this again? But should I hang on to it? And I don't think so, until all of a sudden the internet goes down, which it did. It went down for us on the weekend, which is the craziest Mexican ranchitos version of losing your internet, because my infrastructure is made up of a Wi-Fi connection to X-Pro, and that connection is the antenna repeater that's in the backyard of my neighbor's house. My neighbor is having electrical problems. The repeater was going up and down, up and down. I think half his phases were down. I think he only was getting 110 instead of 220 coming into the house, and it was causing the repeater to fail. Juan came over. I invited him over with an extension cord, and we plugged the neighborhood internet into my electricity in the back of my house so that 10 people out here in the Ranchitos could continue to use internet. It's a funny story, and I forget where I was going with it.
Let me tell you one that's not so funny.
Oh. Go ahead, Chester.
The Internal Revenue Service is trying to get legislation so that they will be notified of every transaction you have in excess of $600 in your bank account.
Who's trying to do that?
Internal Revenue Service.
Oh, baloney.
Yeah. No,
it's
actually, 10,000 this is something I was reading about as well, Chester.
It already is 10, I think.
Yeah.
No, it's 10 cash only. Cash coming in is 10, not cash going out.
Oh, this is
due to the laundering of drug money.
It hasn't happened, though, right? This is, they're talking about this.
Yes, that's they're requesting out of the current legislation.
I thought it was $6,000.
No, it's $600.
$600.
Okay.
Every way, each way.
That's like a grocery bill.
Yeah, it's any electronic transaction over $600 or more, the IRS would be reported. It would be reported to the IRS.
No, not just electronic. Could be check or cash or bank transfer. You could transfer from one account to the other and still run into it. It's a bad deal.
Yeah. Well, it seems pretty invasive.
It's just as invasive as the whatever agency it is. I can't remember, but they're listening to every phone call you make and at least getting the numbers that you make.
Well, that would be the U.S. government.
Yes.
That's the reason they have problems with China, is because they're the only governments that's supposed to be listening to us.
So the big significance for us is if I write a check to Cibanco to build up my peso account, then that would look like I'm laundering money.
Well, however, it would be interpreted during the times, right? I mean, like these things are, we're thinking, being put in place to keep track of drug financing, illicit behavior. But it seems like
$600? That's nothing.
I mean, know it is. Yeah. But that's the what they're trying to do is they're trying to double the numbers of employees in the IRS. And when they can do that, then they're going to propose that they visualize or have information or be notified by all the banks for any transaction in any account over $600. And what they're after is people who are avoiding income tax.
But can you imagine just the sheer mass number of people that it would take to monitor that? Because if I get a deposit from Medicare or from Social Security over $600, I mean, that's like a ridiculous number.
Well, it is. They will probably have, what do they call it, that Facebook has? Audit, something engrams. Anyway, they have computer systems that recognize only certain words or
algorithms.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll have algorithms. Social security checks will all be voided or not.
They're already tracked, right? I mean, they're issuing them to you, so they already know you got them.
But when that check comes into my one account and then it transfers over to the other account, it's going to flag that.
Yes,
that's ridiculous.
Yep, you're right. It's totally ridiculous and hopefully unconstitutional.
The banks are going to have to double their staff.
Oh, definitely.
Well, the way you guys are talking, and I haven't heard or seen any of this, but one of the issues right now is all this cryptocurrency. And the IRS is able to investigate through the blockchain, but it takes lots of man hours. And I wonder if this doesn't have something to do with it. Like you had mentioned something earlier about how many employees they're trying to build up. Well, they would definitely be able to justify having more employees if they're trying to keep track of so many transactions. And I wonder if this has some foundation in trying to track these blockchain transactions.
That hasn't been mentioned, but they're talking about $78 billion to hire 800,000 employees.
There's more to it. Basically, you can't get... I had a recent correspondence with IRS, and I spent 20 hours at least on many occasions trying to get through. They're so understaffed that you just can't get through to them. Over a course of weeks, I finally got through it late at night with an IRS agent. So they must be very, very understaffed, and they need to bolster that part. So I think they definitely need more people, or maybe the people that do work there just aren't working. I don't know.
I think that's true. I believe that is true. And I don't think they have the attention to the audit staff that they probably need to have. But whether it's $78 billion worth and 800,000 employees and $600 bank transactions, that's going a little bit too far.
It won't happen. It's like any other ridiculous thing. It just won't happen.
It's the typical kind of overreach that an organization does, knowing that they're going to be swatted away and then being left in that reach. Somewhere in that reach will be the compromise. Maybe they'll ask for 600 and they'll settle on 6,000.
Possible.
No, I'd seen it. They don't need to be paying attention to how often I get a Starbucks coffee or buy lunch for the office. Or it's
that'd be $600.
Yeah, right. That's for the grande.
Twenty years ago, I retired from the public service, and I was at a union meeting, and I noticed that the union that takes care of the taxation, Revenue Canada, here was the only growing department. Like all the rest of us were being cut back because it was big austerity programs. They were trying to balance the budget, except the revenue, and they were just rich, and they were on quotas, catching people. You know, like they had a certain quota to catch. You know, and so they weren't interested if you were just penny ante. They were after big cheaters.
It's probably a bad sign when they're getting paid the most money. The people that are finding and collecting money from people probably shouldn't be getting paid the most money. seems
Scott,
like a conflict of interest.
Can I ask you an off question?
Oh, sure.
Do we have Starbucks in Wymouth yet?
Gosh, you know, it's funny. I would have said no if you hadn't asked. But it seems, I mean, we've got Subway and we've got all these others. It's, you know, did they put a Starbucks in Wymouth?
They were talking about it, but then the pandemic hit, so I don't know. It was going to be where that new movie theater was supposed to be, I thought, across from Sam's Walmart.
Well, is there anything across from the Sam's Walmart new?
I don't know. You're there. I'm here.
I don't think there is. I don't think. I mean, I've driven by there. I'll have to make a specific look. I'm looking in the Starbucks store locator right now to see if there's one in Mexico.
Oh, there's several in Hermosillo.
I don't think they built that shopping center.
Yeah, I'm not.
Because when I was there like 2 months ago, the shopping center, all that stuff was almost ripped down. I don't think they even ever started it. So when are
they
you leaving?
A week from Thursday.
And where's Irving?
I don't know if you guys can see this, but as far as the Starbucks.
I'm in Sedona. I'm on my way.
As far as the Starbucks locator, the closest Starbucks is Obregón, Hermosillo, and Hermosillo, and Hermosillo, and Hermosillo,
right,
and Hermosillo.
One at the airport, and then there's one past Costco the other way, and then there's one the downtown one kind of.
Puerta Oeste has one. The Metro Center, mm-hmm. you know, where the movie theater is, has one.
Yep.
Apto Hermosillo, I don't know what that is. The airport, and there's one on Boulevard Morelos.
Yes.
I had no idea there were so many Starbucks. Just an hour's drive from here. I don't actually want Starbucks in the first place.
I was going to say, isn't there coffee shops or like Combate or somebody like that?
Oh, well, I would definitely take Starbucks over that.
Me too.
Any given the choice.
Can't afford Starbucks.
Right. I'd rather send my kids to private school than buy Starbucks. That's the way it works in my house.
And for me, I'd rather have Starbucks.
I'd rather have home coffee.
I make some pretty decent coffee. I don't need to go to Starbucks. Hey, one of the topics that I put on our list was this Bitcoin mining operation that just bought a coal-powered power plant in Pennsylvania. Who knew that would start happening? So it's the Bitcoin miners need more electricity, and it's gotten too expensive, so they bought their own power plant.
That's also a problem in China. Chinese government is clamping down on the Bitcoin miners because they consume so much power.
No, that's incorrect. China has outlawed it completely.
Okay. Yeah, I think you guys are saying the same thing.
Mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can no longer mine in China.
It's illegal to be a miner in China.
So Colorado Springs just closed down their big coal fire plant, and now we're going to natural gas for a while. And so then I just read that natural gas is at a premium right now. So,
Well, who owns the coal plant? Because that would be my biggest concern with this kind of news.
Well, Colorado Springs is a city-owned utility for the power plant, electric, gas, and water is city-owned.
The company that I work for supplied coal to that plant.
To Martin Drake. That's where my husband retired from.
Well, it seems like what you would want to do is be very aware of what's happening with your old coal plant if Bitcoin miners can buy them on the open market. Because
they're supposed to tear it down.
They're supposed to tear it down.
Because it's part of the urban renewal area by the new stadium and all that stuff. So
Scott.
Yes, sir.
We have something similar happening in Canada. We have one province, Quebec, that has an awful lot of hydroelectric power. So they've been building Bitcoin mines up there, then tapping into their grid. But just within 30 miles from here, there was a shut-in gas well that was bought up by a Bitcoin company, and they just set up several great big portable generating plants and started mining. The only problem was that they put these big generators right beside an upscale neighborhood development, and people started complaining about the noise, so these guys had to shut it down. They didn't have permits, the right permits for it. But they're doing it all over here. They're buying up power, basically, and they're mining.
Well, at least with the hydropower, you're not contributing to the problem, or hopefully you're not contributing to the problem. I mean, there are secondary effects in all these technologies, so you could probably trace hydro back to a problem with the ecosystem or maintenance issues, but it's not the same as burning coal or gas. The burning of stuff to make these coins is what makes it seem so ridiculous. If you can run solar, wind, or water, then it's just you got to rein in the secondary effects of those technologies to make it okay.
Well, one of the things I posted on your document was the company that's working on the new supercomputers that are basically, they say within a few years are going to be desktop. They don't need the absolute zero cooling. They've figured out a way to do quantum computing without it, or whatever it is.
No cryo cooling required. I've got it up here. This is the article that you're referring to, and they figured out a way to do quantum. This is all an Australian German company has figured out a way to do quantum computing, and it says here the size of a graphic card and work at room temperature. This is the game changer, isn't it, Bill?
Yeah, well, exactly. Like as soon as you do that, death, and you're going to see a big change in Bitcoin mining if that comes by, because the person's going to be able to set one of them on his desk and away you go, you know. So everybody's going to be bit mining with desktops, basically.
So here's the question I had from the very beginning with cryptocurrency. It's supposed to be finite, meaning there's a maximum amount that could be had. How can they keep mining and mining and mining when the prices fluctuate by supply and demand?
Well, it's the analogy, you've heard it before, is to gold. The idea being that you will run out at some point. The big difference between gold and Bitcoin, specifically Bitcoin, is that you already know the end amount. You already know how much is available there. Whereas in gold, you actually don't. You have an educated guess of how much gold is on the planet. Whereas in Bitcoin, through the algorithm, they have pre-programmed exactly how many coins are available. And they've written the algorithm so that as you approach that number, it gets harder and harder to calculate.
But do you know the number that's left? Is there a number saying, oh, we have X amount available?
Yes. Yeah. There is a finite number at any given time. When you look at a blockchain, you know exactly how much is left, and that blockchain is shared with everyone that's mining. And so at the moment the blockchain is updated, there's a new number of what's left. And that number just has to propagate across the miners. And because of the way the blockchain works and the verification of the blockchain, then you need more than 51% to verify that is the case. And so as soon as that propagates through the miners, that new number is known.
Why isn't it published?
Well, the number of total Bitcoins is published. And then what is remaining is just the math after the last time the blockchain has been updated. With the mining, not with the transactions, but with the mining. Because the mining spits out the coin that can be put into service. So there's only so many coins that are ever going to be spit out. There's some date they've projected where they will no longer be mining more Bitcoins, given the rate of adoption that they've got right now. There is a number there. There's a date out there. In fact, we should make it a research project, because there was a time when I knew this stuff and I just haven't paid any attention to it. But there is a specific number of coins. No more than those coins will be generated. And there's an algorithm so that every time a coin is generated, it becomes logarithmically more difficult to generate the next coin to keep that demand, to keep the supply and demand like as it is. So there's an incentive to mine, but then you need more power to be successful. In fact, in Bitcoin, all this is flushing back to me, Irving. I have not thought about this stuff in a couple of years, but it's all rushing back into my brain. And I'm remembering that when you're mining, you are all on a right race. If we could have a start where all the miners are going, they've all gotten the blockchain update and they're mining again. There is a race between all the miners to get to that next Bitcoin that's going to be generated. And the first one that generates it sends out the update to the blockchain. All this happens automatically through algorithms, saying there is no person doing what I'm describing. This is just the way it works. And that update propagates across the internet and is accepted as the new number by the other miners, verifying that that miner got the coin, if that makes sense.
Well, what happens when these companies go broke and essentially the data is lost, so the Bitcoin is lost? What happens to those Bitcoins?
Well, if what you're describing is the loss of a Bitcoin wallet, we've already had that happen a number of times. Kind of like suitcases of money that are lost in a ship going, like a Titanic type event. Those coins have been lost. The difference is that in the case of the Titanic analogy, a government could choose to reissue those bills that were lost, whereas you can't do that in Bitcoin. They're just gone, and that lack of supply causes the demand to be even higher. It raises the value of the Bitcoin.
Well, aren't there more than one cyber coin? It seems like every time you turn around, there's a new cyber coin other than Bitcoin.
I love having an impromptu discussion about Bitcoin, but I have to say again, I'm not prepared for it. There are a number of coins out there, and there are actually two different models that I'm aware of that are being followed right now. And we have a countdown on our meeting, so I hope everybody has their next meeting code ready. It looks like this call is going to end in 2 minutes. And so we started the meeting at 9:45 my time, and it's 10:44 my time now. So let's switch over so I can prattle on about Bitcoin to you. I am going to start that right now so we can start migrating over to the other as soon as it gives me a start button. Come along. You'll be able to join into getting ready. I'm going to refresh it. It's just not doing what it's supposed to do. There we go. Okay, the new meet is open, and there's a bunch of people waiting to get in. Admit all. There we go. And I'm going to shut down the old meet. If there's anybody, I see there's still four people in the old meet. Fred, Jim, it just ended, so it's too late. I was going to help anybody in the old meet, but it's too late. I hope everyone makes it over. Here comes Jim. Do we get everybody? I've got seven people so far. I feel like we're missing a few.
Linda's not here. Irving's not here.
Oh, I thought I just saw Irving pop on.
Nope. Well, I don't see him if he's there. And Linda.
Irving and Linda are missing now.
And your dad. I don't know which one was on.
Well, we'll give them just another moment to get on. I wish Maggie was here today. She had asked me about the Microsoft equivalent to LastPass. She had forgotten the name of it, and it was the Microsoft Authenticator. And I have an article from Forbes from a few weeks ago as one of our topics, and it's actually Microsoft encouraging you to delete your passwords. Here comes Fred. Fred found us. All right. We should try and do that transition a little earlier so we can help people if they're having trouble finding the links. When that meeting shut off, you lost access to the links.
Actually, mine, I just click on both links and then click out of the one that's ending and the other one comes up.
I think that's a great way to do it. I try and keep the second meet in a tab as well so I can just switch over to it. I was surprised today because it was not ready. I had to refresh it to make it ready. Well, we were talking about Bitcoin, and I was just about ready to state about the two different ways I understand them give value to Bitcoin. And one is proof of work, and the other is proof of stake. And proof of work is an easy concept for me to understand because you are basically using all that electricity and CPU time to generate your Bitcoin. And under classic Bitcoin, the amount of electricity and time you've used is what gives value to the Bitcoin. And so the algorithm is encouraging you to use more electricity, which is not a good thing for our environment. But it's very straightforward to understand why that is worth. The other is proof of stake. And proof of stake has something to do with the amount of involvement and value that you're backing with your Bitcoin. And it doesn't require as much electricity, but it does require the same, like some faux work algorithms that I cannot even speak to off the cuff. I guess I would have to look it up. I'm realizing as we're talking that I can't speak to it. But you know what I will do is I'll put it in a note and I will make the contrast next meeting, the difference between proof of work and proof of stake. The proof of stake model is one where it's been adapted to these new coins so that they can deal with the argument of wasted resources on something as simple as currency versus proof of stake. But I suspect I may have just exhausted my brain of Bitcoin topics. If anyone would like to add something, please feel free to chime in. Well, that is the reason that they are buying electric companies, is speculation of Bitcoin in the future. There are Bitcoin millionaires out there. I'm fairly adverse to risk, so I'm not one of them. Here we go. This is the other topic I had on our document for possible topics for today. Delete your Windows 10 password. Now, Microsoft suddenly issues security updates for millions. I find it difficult to back Microsoft on this idea that their authenticator allows you to delete your passwords. but they seem pretty confident. This authenticator that has incorporated features like you would find in LastPass as well is the idea of you approaching an account and it's sending authentication off to another device. The way I imagine this happens, well, some people are using this. I'm not using it. It's the way it's been described. Maybe I should get into this so I would have the experience myself. But you would go to something, for example, in a web browser to Hotmail, and you type in your email address, and it would come to your phone saying, is this you trying to sign in? Very similar to a second factor, a two-factor authentication experience. Now, the difference is that the authenticator at that point, the app on your phone will be deciding how you're getting into your system. It won't be by your password. It could be by some in-the-moment password or some hash instructions sent from your phone. I will really have to get the authenticator app and start playing with it. It's been around for a while. The big news in it most recently is this thing that Microsoft is trying to encourage people to get rid of their passwords and use a piece of technology as your authentication, and that they have added a black book kind of experience to Authenticator so that it can replace your LastPass. I don't know, are any of you using this Microsoft Authenticator or have even heard of it? Everybody's cameras are off and their mics are off, so I'm not sure if anybody's hearing what I'm saying. I hope people are.
I'm hearing it and not using it.
Okay.
But something is happening when I'm on Microsoft, on my Windows machine. It remembers my password and it tells me every so often, your passwords need fixing, that they've been compromised. But I don't go to it. I ignore it.
And mine does that when I use Face ID and it says that it's been compromised.
Systems that are able to look at what you're signing in with and tell you you've been compromised, they've just been written so that they're going to the public database of compromised accounts and looking you up. So when you put in your name, it's on the Macintosh, for example, it has Keychain in Safari. It knows the email addresses, the usernames you're using with certain accounts. Like say you go to Hotmail and you've got a Hotmail address. It's saved and then it's periodically checking that compromised list out there on the internet, and it's coming back with feedback saying, hey, we found your account on that list. You should probably change your password. I don't think you get off the compromised list without changing email addresses. I think you will constantly be told that you're on a compromised list until that day when you've just given up that email address that has been compromised. Now, that doesn't mean that the email address is that you're in any kind of risk. If you've changed the password, taken the precautions, and part of the precautions is understanding you're on a list. The idea that you're on a list should be lucid while you use this account. Anything being sent to this account should be questionable when you get something in the email. If they're addressing you personally, this is a problem. If they know personal information about you, in the past, that would be a sign of credibility. Now it may be very suspicious. Some of these unsolicited emails that don't come from your family that have extended personal information about you intended to make you feel comfortable with dealing with it should now cause you to be suspicious. Why would they have that much information? And I suspect in the end, at some point, the easiest answer to give is change your email address, because at that square one, you know where you sit as far as compromise goes. Nobody has that email yet, hasn't been compromised yet. You should not be approached on that email unsolicited. Everything that you are should be suspicious. If you can catch the balance that I'm trying to put against using. I still use email accounts that are on those compromise lists because I've had the emails for years, and I have to check the compromises for fear that maybe it's been compromised again, because that's really what you're contending with is you change the password, you take your security procedures, and you go forward. And like I was mentioning before, one of your new security procedures after you've been on one of those compromise lists is be very suspicious of any emails that have good information about you, good individual information like your location, like your middle name, like your age, coming from any source of the internet. whereas before that might have legitimized it, like Netflix sending you an email going, hey, happy birthday. For your birthday, we're going to give you $10 off of the 3 months of 4K service. In the past, you'd be like, hey, that's awesome. I'm a Netflix subscriber and they've recognized my birthday and I'm going to take advantage of that. Whereas now your email's in the compromised database and who knows what information's been compromised. So that email needs to immediately become suspicious. Whereas before you felt comfortable, now you should feel very uncomfortable. You don't know where that email's leading to. And in the example I just created, if I got an email like that and I have specifically two different accounts, I would not take it seriously at all. I would immediately go to Netflix, not from the email, of course, but on my own, and look for any announcement like that in this particular example, because I couldn't trust that email. And that's what you're contending with, is that kind of headache and frustration from an email that has been compromised in the past.
So you would just delete that email?
It might be legitimate. The problem is you're having trouble vetting it because your email account has been compromised in the past. And so you can't just look at it and go, thanks, Netflix. You have to look at it and go, wait, is this garbage too? Even though they know my birthday, even though they know my first and last name, they can address me like they know who I am. That's exactly what these compromises represent, is you are known by the database of passwords out there that have been compromised. So you can't, that email address, you can no longer take seriously. You have to take it very suspiciously, if you follow what I mean there, James.
But isn't that true with anything you get via email, is that you should be suspicious of it? Because we all know that we should not click on anything in an email.
Right. And I absolutely preach that as well. I just think this brings a whole new nuance to it when you're on one of those compromise lists. And when you look at the amount of information that has been compromised, that I should say in a positive? Let me rephrase that. You could easily get an email from your aunt or your mom or your sister with information that they would know, that would lull you into thinking you're having a legitimate conversation. And really, it's only been devised by the amount of information that has been compromised. And that's what we've seen with the Equifax compromise and the Facebook compromise, is that insane amounts of personal information are out there in that glob, and they are associated with that compromised email address, if you follow what I mean.
But it's easier said than done to change your email address.
It's very easy to change your email address. It's very hard to live with.
Yeah, no. It's...
Yeah. And I have a number of emails, and maybe people like ourselves should come up with our own policy for how to deal with these compromises. Maybe what makes sense, and this is just off the top of my head, but maybe what makes sense is changing emails, putting together a new email address, and making sure that gets out to everyone that's relevant, like a blanket email to your contact lists, something like that. But you hang on to the old email, and you continue to monitor the old email, and you just know that everything that comes into that email is a suspicious email, until you've reached a point where you can live without it. Maybe that's the kind of policy that folks like ourselves need to have. I don't know. If anybody has any suggestions on the best way to deal with these kinds of problems, you heard what I'm doing and what Cheryl's doing and what Judy's doing, is we're just moving forward with emails we know that have been compromised. And thank God we know, because at least we know to go change the passwords.
Can I ask a question regarding this?
Sure, Chester.
I recently had an email from a longtime friend in San Carlos who has since moved away, asking me to buy something and ship it to an address. And I emailed it back and said that, well, if to verify your who you are, tell me who is my best friend and where my best friend lives. Well, I never heard from that old friend again.
Wow, Chester, that was brilliant.
Would you say my email address is compromised?
Well, maybe. It sounds like wherever you're getting that email from is questionable at the very least. Your email email will show up on these compromise lists if it's been compromised, and they're publicly available. It's been a little disconcerting to some people as they've integrated into our softwares. We have password managers in Chrome and in Firefox, and they're doing this now as well, as they are looking at your password list and giving you a status report on whether they've been compromised in the past. They're looking at what you use for a username and comparing it to the public database of compromised email addresses.
Well, and then I have a Gmail account, and the amount that goes into the spam section is really quite substantial every day.
I don't know if you'd even want to pay attention to your spam these days. It's so extensive. But what that would represent is just legitimate spam. A lot of times that's not even dangerous or compromised. That's just,
spam.
Just spam. Just your typical junk mail that no longer shows up at your doorstep, but comes in electronic.
Okay, I just wanted to run that by you.
Yeah, as you were saying that, I had another thought on this. So Facebook's had a compromise. Your email addresses have been lost. Personal information's been lost. Now, tie all that to the typical Facebook hack, where somebody has been able to create a username that's identical to somebody you know, and 100 of your friends, you have 100 people that are in common. This happens all the time, especially here in San Carlos. This crowd gets this all the time. You get a friend request from someone you know from the community, and you're like, oh, I didn't even know I didn't have her on my friends list. And you say, okay. And later on, you start having a conversation with this person, and you think that it's a legitimate, this is my friend from Loma del Mar. And you're having this conversation, and they're asking for something, or they want to send you something. They've got your email address already. They already know personal things about you, because they're using this public database to compromise you on Facebook with information that they know about you that will lull you into a sense of security. So after you've decided it's Bill Thomas that I'm talking to through Messenger, and the person on the other side is able to send me a new article to my Hotmail account. Well, that all seems very legitimate. Bill does that all the time. Scott, I'll send you the latest computer topic we're going. I'll send it to your Hotmail. Well, as far as I'm concerned, I'm talking to Bill. It doesn't even occur to me that might be a compromised account. He could even start out with, thanks for friending me. God damn it. I lost my password. I cannot get it back in. I had to start a new account. And I would buy into that if I wasn't aware of these compromises that are going on. I like Chester's approach to it. We should all have that kind of approach to specific activity. This, my neighbor has friended me. I thought I had him on the list. If you think that you already have him on the list, don't friend that person. Go to your list and make sure that you're right, that you did have that person on the list. Many times you'll go to that person's homepage and you'll find, I've been hacked. Everybody just ignore these messages as one of the first posts on their Facebook page.
Scott?
Yes, if that really is Bill.
Yeah, well, nobody looks like this except maybe Willie Nelson, so you're pretty good, pretty safe.
Well, they'll take one of your pictures and make the new account with it.
Yeah, but this is live video. Anyway, another thing that people should be conscious of is those silly little things on Facebook that come up, what's the, combine your dad's first name with the last three letters of your name to and this is your new gangster name or something.
Right.
Those are all phishing expeditions, just gathering information. And then I get three or four of them every day. They just come in. What's your first dog's name? Spelt backwards. Yeah, all of those.
You're right.
I just consider them to be phishing expeditions, and I never answer in. I block as much as I can.
At the very least, when you interact with one of those, you're giving them certain permissions of your Facebook experience.
Yeah.
Now, they've done a good job of trying to clamp down on that. It used to be you would like them, and all of a sudden they had access to all your friends list and your friends of friends list, depending on how securities were set. And I know that Facebook has clamped down on that a bit. But still, the very interaction requires that they have certain permissions with your Facebook account. They have the ability to read things and see pictures of things. And so all of a sudden, they know you're married. They know you have grandkids. They know because you gave a game, an interaction. You've given them some sort of permission. It's fascinating. I think it's. I think you should choose that everything is suspicious until it's not at this point. We lost Judy,
Scott,
I see.
Scott, what about Paul? Those, when you sign up for something, it's got 87 pages of terms of service. And one of the terms is that they can use any picture on your phone or something like that, you know. You wouldn't be able to sign up for anything because if that was a compromise, it would be terrible.
I'm not sure I'm understanding the thought. You're following through, Paul. What are you saying?
If you invoke an app on your phone, and first you get to read the terms of service, and in that terms of service, it says our company has the right to use pictures that are on your phone or your contact list that's on your phone.
Yeah.
I mean, they almost all do that. That means you are in jeopardy if you use any app.
Well,
it has that.
I hear a couple of different concepts in here. I mean, one is like you've agreed to terms of service with Twitter and Instagram and Facebook where they can take your pictures. Actually, I don't think Facebook has it, but Instagram and Twitter, they can take pictures you've posted and use them to promote their product. So if all of a sudden you go to a Twitter front end, you might see a picture of yourself there because you've signed some terms of service to do that. Those are okay because you're sharing them. They're okay to be used like that. And I'm realizing now I'm thinking of some specific circumstances that I don't remember the company. So I may be off with the Twitter, Facebook thing. But just as an example, just speaking in general, that's what that concept is. And then, Paul, there's another concept that we seldom think about, but it's when you invoke an app on your phone, and one of the first things it does is find other people that are using the same app. And what you're doing is you're loading your contact list into their database. So that is just a mesh network of contacts that are being pieced together. Paul's name is in my list of contacts. When Paul decides to use the same app, his list of contacts are put in there. All of a sudden, they have this whole mesh of people interconnected, like 6 degrees away from Kevin Bacon. And you're some of these compromises, you have no control. My name is in your contact list, I imagine. If you've given that information away for a service, all of a sudden they're tracking me too. It's called an invisible user. They've got this ghost user on their system where every time my contact information is referenced by someone else, it's also attached to that reference. So now I know Paul and Bill and Cheryl, not because I shared my contact list, but because those three are using services that shared their contact lists. You guys have heard me talk about it in the past. I'm just ready for just open world. I'm ready for it just all to be out there. It's too difficult for us with these secrets from governments and businesses. We should hold them to the same account of open world. Every day, anybody who cares should be able to go and see what they're doing. I'm fine with them coming to see what I'm doing. I'm not hurting the planet. I'm not waging wars on third world nations. I'm not dumping gallons of oil into the ocean. So you can see my browser history activity. Let me see what you guys are doing. That's what I think the standard should be.
Well, when I first joined Facebook, you know, many, many years ago, I figured, well, I'm going to share where I worked and where I live and all those things and my birthday because I want people to find me and be my friends, you know, people from high school, people from the Coast Guard, whatever. So I was open with that. But now when I look at people's account, that's all hidden, you know.
Well, you know, a lot of us went through these growing pains. I don't know about you guys, but I stuck all my information into these social networks to begin with. And then as people have been compromised, as the information you wanted to share, innocently wanted to share for good reasons, is being used against people, like it's being used to recognize you're not at your house. This is a good time to rob the house, right? These kinds of things, you find, and I did it myself, you start holding back, stripping back that information, getting it out of the platform so it can't be found, keeping it out of the platform. So information, and I, when my kids started doing this kind of stuff, and they still, they're not on any specific social network, but I trained them that sharing is great, but the information should be generalized, so it can't be narrowed down to specifics. You can say you woke up in a happy mood. You don't have to say how happy you are to be at La Playa at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There's no reason you need to share. You can share the same emotion and sentiment without doxing yourself. And I think that's really how you have to think about these things now. I agree with you, Paul. I did the same thing. I want people to find me. But then later on, after all this, I've gone back through and I've tried to take out as much identifying information. And as I post information, I try and keep identifying information out of it. I heard a chuckle from James there. Did you have something you wanted to add?
Not much. Just I try to work with Carolyn on that issue. She's not very, she's a very trusting person.
Yeah. I think until we have a cultural shift into an open world like I'd like to see, you have to play your cards close to your chest. There's just no options.
That's true.
Well, the
recommendation.
Oh, yes.
I have a recommendation. Yeah. I binge watched something on Netflix. I'm not sure if I really wanted to watch it after I've seen the whole series, but it's Squid Game.
Oh my God. I can't believe I didn't make that one of my recommendations. That's you all over it? Right now. Yeah, we've seen it. It is the hottest thing in Mexico, but apparently it's the hottest thing on the internet right now.
I guess so. But the finish didn't satisfy me.
No.
I missed the name of the show.
Squid Game. It's from Korea.
It's a South Korean sci-fi dystopian story of the future. That's like 5 minutes away from now, where people play games to win money, but the challenge is they're facing death. And they were selected as drains on the community, didn't they? What they have in common is they're all in immense debt and desperate. Yeah. And so they could easily be put into these games. I don't want to go any deeper because the plot, it unravels throughout the series and it definitely keeps you going. We ended up binging it. We ended up starting with the first one and just kept going until we had to shut it off and start again another
seasons?
Day. I think it's just one season. But there's a definite reason for everything that's happening and it unravels as you go through the story. And to even talk about it, when you get at the end, you have such a clear idea of what's been going on that it's easy to spoil it for somebody by talking too much at the beginning of it.
Well, if it's any
end is a gateway for another season.
Mm. Yeah, I started it this morning for about 5 minutes, but I kind of gave up on it. I can't really handle that Asian cinematic wide-eyed staring into the camera with overreaction screaming kind of acting. It just drives me nuts.
Is it subtitled or
yes. No, it's in English.
It's both. It's been produced to be consumed on Netflix, so they've got a really good dub of it. In fact, I watched did you watch the lips? I'm waiting to see this AI technology start meshing the lips of the actors to the dialogue in it, dubbed in a different language, and the next step will be in the actor's voice, but in the foreign language they don't speak.
Yeah.
And I thought they did a great job meshing the lips and the dub.
Yes, it looked authentic.
Yeah,
there's a dub and a written action.
Yeah, they've got subtitles as well.
And okay, I have a recommendation.
Hold on a second, Bill. Paul, go ahead and finish that thought.
They were translated by two different algorithms or people.
I saw that. Yeah, they didn't use the same wording for both.
Right.
Yeah, you're listening to the dub and you're watching the subtitles and they've chosen different words.
Anyway, I ran across the Buddy Holly story movie the other day. And if you like... that era genre music, it's a delight to watch.
It's a movie?
The movie, yes. The Buddy Holly movie.
Buddy Holly? I don't even know. Is it the Buddy Holly story?
Yeah, it could be. Yes, the Buddy Holly story. And it has, Who the hell is Buddy Holly? He's very...
Well, he's from the Jerry Lee Lewis and Elvis and Chuck Berry time period, right?
Yeah, the song, The Night the Music Died or something is about him, when him and the plane crash.
Was it the 1978 movie? Because that is the Buddy Holly story.
I believe it is. I believe it is. Anyway, if you like it, that style of music, it's fun to watch just for that, because they sing whole songs in it, and the two actors that are main in it do very well. The other comment I have is I told Cheryl yesterday that I disappeared down the Sopranos rabbit hole yesterday or the day before.
Wait, don't go away from Buddy Holly. Searched it. Do you know that was Gary Busey? I had no idea that was Gary Busey.
That's who I was trying to, and I believe he does the singing. It's if not, it's a very, very good dub. And the actor that played Toad in American Graffiti is the bass player.
I remember really enjoying this movie. I haven't seen it in years, but your recommendation, I may have to watch it again.
Yeah, it's just a fun sit down and listen to the Let It Flow.
What a great...
Gary Busey won the Oscar for that.
Gary Busey won an Oscar for that? Wow.
He won an Oscar for that and then just went totally downhill.
True enough.
Bill and I were watching Free Guy, but we only made it halfway through so far. So.
What'd you think of it? We really enjoyed it.
Well, we said we can see how Scott and the family really liked this, but
were you watching it with the grandkids? I think you got to watch it with the grandkids.
Well, I said that maybe we should be watching it with them, but unfortunately, in the Alberta situation, we are not seeing our grandchildren in person, so we have to do a watch thing or something.
Scott,
one of those up.
If we were in Mexico, Alberta would be double red. Right? All the ICUs are overflowing. The hospital system is just about in collapse. Right? You do not want to get sick in Alberta right now at all.
That seems to be the same. My dad might chime in, but that seems to be the same in Anchorage in Alaska right
now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's all of Alberta. Like they put all the surge beds that they can possibly staff in place, and they're still 100+% over capacity. They're at the end of the rope. There's nowhere else to go here.
Saskatchewan as well.
Disaster status too in Alaska.
Yes.
We've got a mayor in Anchorage, a new mayor that absolutely is telling people don't wear your masks, and a governor doing the same thing, and every hospital's full throughout the state.
Well, that's exactly what's going on here.
We've canceled all kinds of surgeries, but Scott, you were asking about the grandchildren. Let's go back to movies and stuff like that. But anyway.
No, it's my turn. I mentioned Sopranos. I ran across Sopranos. I figured I got to have a look at this. And I definitely have fallen down the rabbit hole so far. And
you know what you're doing is you're getting ready for the new series that's coming out.
Well, my problem is by the time I get to the end of the series, I can't remember who the hell the people were at the beginning and what the storylines were. So, the positive side of this is I think I got 6 or 7 seasons to binge if I want. That could be here all winter.
You might be.
Well, we saw the Many Saints of Newark, which is supposed to be Tony Soprano when he was young, played by the same actor who's the son of, I can't think of the name of Tony's actor.
Was that the same actor?
That's his son.
But the actor that played his son in The Sopranos, that's who you're talking about?
No, I don't know if played it. No, it's his
real son.
Oh, it's his real son playing it. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't understand that at all.
And I thought it was a great movie. We really enjoyed it.
So it's a movie. It's not.
Pardon?
You said the mini.
What's the name of the miniseries, Terry?
It's not a miniseries. It's a movie that we saw, which was The Many Saints of Newark, which is on at the movie theaters now.
Okay, so this is the actor. Son in this movie playing the young Tony Soprano?
Yes.
Okay. And I thought that was supposed to be a new series, but that's a movie.
I thought so too. So maybe there's both coming along because we were surprised to find it at the movie theater.
Well, that's really interesting. Newark.
And we're going to go see the new James Bond movie on Saturday with Stacy. It's Reese's birthday, so we're taking him to see, what's it called?
A Time to
Time to Die or Not a Time to Die. Or Care, whatever the name of it is.
Too Tired to Care.
Yeah.
New James Bond. I just saw that name.
No Time to Die.
No Time Like the Present.
It's Daniel Craig's Last Hurrah.
Well, his last one was supposed to be the last hurrah. He was going to swear it off. He was so disappointed with the experience of the last one.
At least remember when he was first selected as a Bond that the Queen was not even happy with him? It was so fascinating. I think he's turned out to be one of the best, and yet a lot of people were reluctant. I think it was because he had blonde hair or something. He just had such a different look.
Longest running.
They could do the Sean Connery thing and put a wig on him. He wore a wig for every one of his Bonds.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's become my hair hero.
I also watch the cliches of Hollywood or the cliches of motion pictures, something like that. The 1 hour program that shows all these different tricks or setups that they have in the movies to entertain you, but it's used over and over again. So they're cliches, like fighting on the top of a train and
all the tropes. Yeah, all these same tropes.
The Wilhelm scream.
Have you guys ever? I don't expect you guys to be into animation, but there is a Fox TV show called Archer. You've probably seen the commercials for it. The Archer, it's an animated series for mature adults. It's a TVMA, and it is hilarious. And the entire series, they've got like 12 seasons of Archer. And the whole concept of Archer is playing on the tropes of the super spy character. And so they're pulling all these references from fighting on top of the train having to capture the vial that if it's dropped will kill people within a 10-mile radius, and all these different things you think of from a James Bond style movie or Johnny Quest episodes or things of that nature. They play on in this animation, and it's so well done, and it's so funny. They do all the super spy stuff, and they have this tongue-in-cheek smart-ass kind of dialogue that goes along with it. Their James Bond is sophisticated and wisecracking and dumb all at the same time. He's also an alcoholic, but highly functional alcoholic. Like, being an alcoholic is part of being a super spy.
Oh, you're just making me think of Bart Simpson, and it's, you know, it's cool to be dumb or whatever it was with him. But anyways,
I wouldn't make that comparison. I would. Okay. This is a much more sophisticated show than The Simpsons.
Well, so what's the name of that one?
Series
Archer. Archer is the name of it. I didn't mean to recommend it, but I would. I mean, it's a great show. Very funny. Well, and they deal with political issues. Like, they had a whole series on Somalian pirates when all the pirating was going on and how they dealt with it. Archer actually became Pirate King. It's a great arc. It's so fun. I'm sorry, Cheryl. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that there's a couple of new series out on TV. The one, The Bray, and Paul, you live in California, but talk about the worst acting ever. Bill was just kind of in the room while I was watching it on TV, and he said, "Can't anybody deliver a line?" You know, like, it's so bad.
I'm surprised you're bringing this up, Cheryl. I watched that. I'm like, this is not a good show.
Well, that's great. I've watched the first episode, and I'm going to watch the next one, which comes out, I think, tonight. But it just, you know, like, the ground opens up, and they're sucked into this other world. But everything is, it's just awful.
I will watch the second one, and I will probably continue to watch it. It's a perfect example of the kind of bad sci-fi I watch.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna try it again, but I don't know how long I'll stick with it.
But they are riding this edge between adult and child entertainment. like Land of the Lost kind of entertainment.
Yeah.
And I can't decide which direction it's going to go. So I have to watch it again. If it goes into sheer juvenile stuff, I'll probably lose interest. But if it keeps coming up on that adult side of sci-fi, then I'll probably stick with it no matter how bad it is, just to have some background noise.
When the wolf or whatever it was, and you know, people apart, that's very dumb. Yeah. Anyways, it just
kept reminding me of Land of the Lost until the wolf is ripping the guts out of somebody.
Yeah, it's just,
in my opinion, Shatner and David Carradine should be delivering dialogue in the scene. They're very good at it. They'd be excellent actors in this series.
They'd be lucky to have them.
Maybe needs.
Well, it would complete the parody. That's what it would do.
That's right. All right,
so
Cheryl.
I started watching the next season of Big Sky, which is Montana trucker, really bad guys, and Big Sky is continuing to freak me out and entertain me at the same time. And there's a new one called Moonshine, which is a totally dysfunctional family. There's secrets and all this kind of stuff. But Moonshine looks like it might be kind of cool.
Moonshine, that is not a reality TV show, is it?
No, it is not.
Okay, good. Because I would not put it on my list.
No, I don't usually watch reality TV. No.
Hey, I
like Grey's Anatomy and Station 19. But anyways.
I want to do a shout out to the Foundation TV series. I know we had mentioned it earlier, but we're two episodes into it and I'm hooked. This is the Isaac Asimov book series that's been turned into a TV show. And
I forgot the name of that one.
Yeah, the Foundation or Foundation.
Just straight Foundation.
Foundation. And it's good. Bill, are you up to date with it? Have you watched all three? I haven't watched the third one yet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is it? Go ahead.
Like I said when I talked about it last week, the concept of the Foundation series is there, but the actual following the story arc is not. I mean, it's quite different, but I like it. I'll watch it. I'm waiting for the October 8th, I believe, is the next one.
I wonder if as you get deeper into it, you'll start feeling those. I didn't read the series, but you'll start feeling those threads from the book series. If it's going to be more like they're grabbing from a genre and just building their own stories.
Basically, they took the genre and they went to any direction, their own direction, pretty much. There are some very, very thin connections there. But,
In the books, do you have this bouncing back and forth of thousands of years where you have a story way in the future and one in the past?
No. God, now you're asking me something I read 60 years ago, 50 years ago, and haven't read again.
Hey, we just got the 10-minute warning, so we're going to run through the rest of this stuff real quick. I got one other, if you're interested. The movie is a documentary. It's Britney versus Spears. It's the Britney Spears documentary about... her conservatorship. And it's very interesting. I mean, I'm not a Britney Spears fan whatsoever, but I was interested in reading about this conservatorship and what it's entailed over the last 13 years, how she ended up in it, how she hasn't been able to get out of it. And it's got some great extensive information about what can be done to you if the government says you are no longer the person you are. And that in itself makes it very interesting to watch, is how hard it was for her to get control of her persona again. And
the one that Paul talked about, the prequel to Sopranos, what was it called again?
Oh, yeah, Dad mentioned it. It's the Mini Saints of Newark.
Mini Saints?
Mini Saints of Newark, I think, is the name he gave it.
Okay. I'll find it.
I'll double check it with a Google search, because now that I am running two computers to do this meeting, I have all this resources that are free for me to do
things.
Well,
and I must say that it's your whole show has been reasonably unblemished this time.
Yeah, I think I've saw it. Now, the thing is, we worked out all these problems last season, and then they came back, And I'm blaming Google because I think this meet, this Google Meet is requiring so much more processing out of the computer. The Google Meet actually takes almost 70% of my resources, and recording it was taking the rest of it. And I moved the recording and the streaming, well, not recording, the streaming. I moved the streaming over to another computer, which alleviated like 25% of the workload. But I do think that my problems stem from Google making changes to Meet that require more performance out of your equipment.
We just may have to add a third session here to keep going.
Ah, you think?
Yeah, Many Saints of Newark is a movie that's in theaters now. Is that right?
That's the one that the dad was talking about. The Many Saints of Newark. Wow. And somehow I'm talking and clicking and deleting inadvertently all at the same time. Many Saints of Newark. And that's supposed to be the pre-Sopranos story. This is supposed to be. And I was thinking, I didn't recognize the actor. And I thought, gee, they should have gotten the actor that played Tony's son in the series to play Tony as a kid. But maybe he's too old now. He's probably too old now. But the idea that they're using James Gallifini's actual son, Michael Gallifini's his name, to play the young Tony's pretty cool. Yeah, it is a movie. Many Saints, wait, a prequel movie. I guess everybody's confused about it being. I guess it's a Netflix movie. Is that? No, it's in theaters. Well, I guess Netflix is. I don't know what I talk about.
No, we had to watch it on Radiosity.
Well, and actually, it wouldn't make sense for it to be a Netflix, would it? Because it was an HBO property.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah. The young boy that's played there doesn't really reach adulthood in this show. So he's still fairly young when it ends.
Making room for a series or another movie.
Yeah.
Well, guys.
I thought it was really well done.
We've been looking forward to it. Oh, well, look, we still have 6 minutes. We got any other recommendations to add to the end of our meeting? Dad, you got anything new to add?
Well, we watched a movie called Following Figaro or something like that, something to do with Figaro, the opera.
Okay.
And when we first looked at it, Sandy just said, this looks silly. We decided to try it, and it just turned out to be an amazing movie. I mean, if you can hang on long enough for the first part of it, it's about a young gal that is extremely successful as a financial fund manager, but what she really wants to do is become an opera singer. And so she kind of chucks it all and heads up to Scotland to compete in some contest up there. And so she's living up there for like 6 or 7 months being trained by someone who is just awful to her, but one of the best trainers of opera singers. And the whole story has just been delightful. So we really enjoyed that.
I'm looking it up right now. So this is Falling for Figaro, like falling in love, but Falling for Figaro.
I couldn't remember exactly what it said.
2020 movie.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I'm going to put that on the list too. Any other comments, shares, information? Because I've
been watching Blind Spot. Are you familiar with Blind Spot?
Well, remind me, because it seems like that's a TV show that's been around for a while. Is that right?
Yeah, it has. Yeah, there's quite a few seasons of it. It's where a naked gal shows up.
I already like the sound of it.
All over her body. That's got your attention, Scott?
Yeah. What do you watch it on?
we don't know where it's coming from because we watch it on Radiosity. But
go on, Pop.
The whole idea is that every tattoo on her body, and she's got them everywhere, represents something, some issue the FBI has to deal with. And so they move from one topic to another throughout this show, and it's always a tattoo on her body that's leading them in whatever direction they're going. And they've still never figured out who she is or where she's from, and she doesn't know either. We're into about the fourth season now, and she doesn't know yet who she is. And so it's been, there's a lot of intrigue to it, but it's extremely well done. I really enjoy watching it. I don't know if Sandy cares for it as much as I do, but I think it's really good.
What was the name?
Let's see. Blind Spot.
Okay.
blind spot. It looks like it's been around since 2015. 2015 to 2020, so maybe that means that it is finished running. That's its original release.
I think I've seen it on Netflix, but I just haven't gone to it. I know I've seen it somewhere, but I've been watching Clickbait. I think Clickbait was one that Judy had told us about, and I'm not sure if I finished it the other night or if I'm still going. I can't remember, but anyways, I'll have to look at it. But different. Well, I think I did finish it off. Yeah. The Unexpected. Yeah, now I remember. Judy said that she wasn't going to do any, give it away, and it's very hard not to. But you can't tell anything about Clickbait because it'll give away the big surprise. So it's...
Hey guys, we are ending our call in 2 minutes, so why don't we end this meeting while we've got control over it? Bill, did you have one last thing to say?
I'm just going to say, tech on. I'm out of here.
All right, let's do it.
Next Tuesday will be our last week in this building, this scene, and then we'll be elsewhere.
On the road.
Yes, either in Vegas or San Carlos.
Broadcasting from an undisclosed location, surrounded by champagne and showgirls. We will have Bill and Cheryl with us next week.
And next week we'll be in our home still.
After that, our next week, you'll be right where... Well, check back with us next week in the same bat channel, on the same bat time, for your same computer club meeting. Thank you guys for being here. I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions, and this has been a meeting of the San Carlos Computer Club. We meet every Tuesday at 10 in the morning, and you can check our website at sccclub.org if that has changed. We meet on Google Meet, and anyone is welcome to join us. We encourage all tech enthusiasts to feel free being part of our group. This has been a very successful run of the show on YouTube, and I'm very happy with the results. So we'll be doing more in this format. Until next week, like Bill said, tech on, and we'll talk to you soon. Adios.